This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 295. No animals were harmed during the making of this podcast. Sisterhood, home of the best,
the fucking best
girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister,
and I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to our first post E3 podcast wrap up show thing. I'm so tired.
Yeah, I can tell.
I know, but I'm gonna make this happen. You wanna know why? Because I'm dedicated.
Because we love you.
We do, and we love E3. Eshdog, however, is pissed at us. But that's okay. She's got a riot in her crate.
She's got a bone.
I know.
She'll deal out her aggression that way.
But we have a bunch of stuff to cover in this, our first post E3 podcast, because there's so much that we saw at the show, and there was so much that we did that we're not going to be able to fit it all into one wrap-up show.
But there wasn't that much that we smelled.
Here's the thing. I will say, I will agree with you on that one, Pandalicious. So I expected a lot more con funk.
Granted, there were several hot spots.
There were definitely hot spots of con funk.
But it was not, like, it did not meander past certain hot spots for the funk. Like,
correct.
It didn't, like, go any further than
for
that.
For instance, last year, the funk was prevalent.
It was over in the Capcom area.
It was pretty much both in South and West Hall, just there as, like, an additional character in the game. But this year, definitely, there were only, like, hot spots of it. Hotspot number one, definitely in the Capcom area. Hotspot number two, Gears.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, but and Xbox really had, like, the most open space booth. But the funk was strong with that one.
I think it's because the Gears was, like, an enclosed area. So, like, it permeated in there, and then when the door would open, it would waft in.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think
it
you're right.
It would waft.
But I was generally happy with the amount of cleanliness at this year's convention. So, I mean,
golf
right there.
Clap.
Golf clap.
Good job.
Good job.
Keep it up.
So, first off, I just want to talk about the number of people that were there. And that may actually have be affected by the con funk. Because, you know, last year I think there was somewhere in the neighborhood of like 46 or 47,000 people at the show. This year, definitely less. I think they came in at like 45,000. And I'm going to tell you right now that majority of that was, you know, enthusiast press that wasn't able to get in. So I poured a little out for my homies there.
Don't really pour that on the floor.
Yeah, I'm not going to really pour it on the floor because then you'd have to mop it up. But I am symbolically pouring a little out for the homies that didn't get in. And those who had to fight really hard, you know, like us, to get in, to go. But I think that's part of the reason why it didn't feel so hectic or chaotic, because that's one of the things that I noticed right off the bat, was that even though there were still long lines to get in and see stuff, it didn't feel like there were as many people.
Well, because you could be standing in a line, but you didn't have to worry about the people who were walking by or people who were standing to watch something. Like, you still had your own space. And it always seems like people were always moving. Like, there weren't too many things that really warranted for a big mass of people to just stop dead in their tracks.
Activision did that, though.
Activision did that with their Black Ops 2 thing.
Yeah.
But still, they had a big, massive area that a lot of people could have zoomed in there. Like, if you just happened to catch it, stop. But even then, there was still enough space for you to maneuver around someone who wanted to watch it.
Oh, dude, I had to, like, do the serpentine walk through there a couple of times when that went off. And that was one of the things, like,
I was doing the Assassin's Creed 3 walk, like,
yeah,
I was
yeah.
welding in, like, I totally belong here. So,
you know, and Activision was really, Activision and EA, I think, were the only, like, traffic stoppers.
Yeah, I would agree.
And it was because both of them had, like, big presentation screens on the outside of their booth that at specific times during the day they would run the trailer or a demo of gameplay.
And they had a giant counter so you knew exactly when it was going to happen.
Yeah. And that was a traffic stopper because people, when they saw the countdown, would stop and be like, I don't know if they're giving away something or they're showing off something, but it would massively stop traffic. And the one that did it the most was definitely for Activision was Black Ops 2. Every time that thing came on, it just stopped traffic.
I think Treyarch is, they finally hit their stride in their peak in terms of with Black Ops, because I mean everyone wasn't expecting Black Ops from Treyarch, and now they're just building up on that.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because you know when we first heard that Treyarch was going to be involved with Black Ops, there were a lot of people in the community who were like, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, is it still going to be a Call of Duty game? Because you know Treyarch is not necessarily known for delivering.
They have never, I would say, not until, and I mean, World at War was okay.
Right.
Black Ops got better, and that was Treyarch.
Yeah.
That got better. So, on their level of progression, I'm expecting Black Ops 2 to be better than Black Ops, and from what I've seen and what I've touched of it, they are definitely on the right track to that. Now I just gotta see it all together in front of my screen with my new A50s from Astra.
Yeah, we gotta make that happen. But seriously, you know, when we first saw the trailer, which if you haven't seen it yet, you can definitely hit up their website, or you can watch either the Microsoft media briefing or the Sony media briefing, because they both talked about it.
They both talked about it, yeah.
Microsoft showed off the longer of the trailer versions. But it's definitely ratcheted up a notch as far as the action goes.
Yes, I agree.
As far as the control goes, it's definitely improved as well. Because I got my hands on it for a couple of minutes, which was really cool. But my big thing about it was the way that the trailer starts is all shit's breaking loose. Which, in every single Modern Warfare Call of Duty game, that's what happens. You pretty much start the game with just shit on fire, busticated, and it seems like every game a major explosion happens that you're waking up out of, and then you're just jumped into the shit. And I'm okay with that. And this game, the trailer, didn't start any different. You're on a vehicle with the president and some dude who shot all the fuck up. I'm gonna go with vice president, maybe?
Probably.
And you're riding into a war zone, and the premise is that the bad guy has taken over all of the unarmed aerial assault vehicles, the UAVs, and is using them against the United States. And I don't know if it's against the whole world, but from the trailer, shit's just going nuts because of all these UAVs that are in the sky that are just blowing up everything. And so you are escorting the president to the Bonaventure Hotel to get her to safety.
Yep, because it's a female president.
Because it's a female president.
Progression, everybody.
So right then and there, Treyarch, I was like, tip of the hat to you,
sir.
Where's
Jack Bauer? You need Jack Bauer.
I know, seriously. If you had Jack Bauer in this game, the game would be, you know, you could run through it in like 4 hours. If you were, you know, had a Jack Bauer skin. But, shit blows up. Everybody gets out of the vehicle. The president survives. And there's 4 other guys and you that are trying to escort the president. Now, what I love about the game is that visually, there's something going on everywhere. And you can interact with any piece of it if you want.
Did you just totally glance over the fact that the president got shot?
President didn't get shot.
Yes, she did, because they had to lead her because she got shot.
What?
Yeah. Like, during the conference, because I was live tweeting, and a bunch of us were tweeting, and I didn't realize it at first until our friend over there, GoGamer, Crix, was like, wow, female president got shot. Someone's getting fired.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, she was injured. She got hurt.
Oh.
She got shot. Not wounded, like, fatally, but she got shot.
Not mortally wounded, but
she got shot.
See, I didn't even notice that she got shot.
Yeah, because the two guys on each side of her had to, like, drag her. She got shot. That wasn't the dude. That was the president. I saw that skirt in those heels. Yeah. She got shot.
Completely missed that. I was too busy watching the other explosions and shit.
Yeah.
So, visually, it was just stunning. The environment is a character, and it messes with you and impedes what's going on. I love the new couple of weapons that they showed off. which were the ability to charge the weapon and it would actually fire through lightly plated vehicles or shoot through columns, for instance.
Yeah, exactly, Eshdog.
Eshdog is all about the Call of Duty.
Yep.
I really was impressed with just the new few weapons that they showed off, as well as the environment, and ultimately, it still felt like a Call of Duty game. And it runs fast. You know, of all the things that they wanted to add, they made sure that they didn't drop the 60 frames per second.
Nope.
And that was really cool because they added a lot of things. They added a lot of weapons. They added some customization. And they added a lot more things going on in the environment. You know, one of the things that you can do is you can actually control some UAVs that you can then direct to help provide cover fire as you're running through different areas, which is a huge asset. And to be able to bring those in and focus those and be able to not only protect yourself by providing cover fire for you, but also being able to provide cover fire for an AI so that an AI can lend support, that's a fantastic tool addition. And that it all runs in real time is really fantastic. So I was very impressed with Black Ops 2.
Yes, so was I.
But also on the Activision side of the world, where, to be honest with you, it really wasn't a title that I was paying too much attention to before I got a chance to actually sit down and run through everything that Activision brought to the store, was a Spider-Man game.
Spider-Man game?
Yeah. So, as you know, Sony's getting ready to release the big Spider-Man movie, right?
You're right.
Okay. Well, Beenox, who did the Shattered Dimensions game,
okay,
which, as we all know, was a pretty damn good Spidey game, because any game that has the Neil Patrick Harris in it is a winner.
Instantly awesome.
Right. So they actually worked with Stan Lee and the Sony team to create a Spider-Man game in parallel with the Spider-Man movie.
Ooh.
So the Spider-Man game will be releasing on the 26th at the same time that the movie hits the theaters.
Ah, product placements!
And what Beenox really wanted to do, and they felt like they weren't able to deliver on with the last game, was really having a real, you know, open sandbox environment. So that's the first thing that they did, was they spent time really creating New York City. So this Spider-Man can explore all of New York City.
All the islands?
All the islands. You can hit all the boroughs.
All the boroughs?
You can hit all the boroughs.
Can he go to Bed-Stuy?
Yeah, if he wants to.
Only true heroes go to Bed-Stuy.
Only true heroes go to Bed-Stuy and come back out. But, you know, the big thing about it is they didn't want to get too much into who the big villain was, but there are a couple things that are in the game that are really neat. One is they have all these comic pages that you can find as you explore the environment, and they're not all on like ground level. Some are like in midair, so you have to figure out how to spidey web sling yourself in a way to get the comic pages. But they've included 10 fully digitized Marvel comics, including the first appearance of Spider-Man through the first actual Spider-Man issue. And I think that there's one crossover one, but there's 10 in total that they have these full pages on. So you can actually collect the full comics and read the full comics in the game. So you can make playing, and then once you get all the pages for one particular comic,
go and
read it. You can zoom into it because it's the full digitized version like you would get in the Marvel comic reader that's on the iOS and Android devices. So I thought that it was a cool addition, you know, for anybody who is a real big Spidey fan. To have those additional comics would be a really cool thing on the collector side of the world.
Right.
To be able to have. But again, that's not a quest that you have to do, but it's a quest that you can do.
Completionists will enjoy that.
But what's really fantastic is the level of detail and how obvious it is that the team at Beenox are Spidey fans, because they work with Sony to make sure that the detail of the costume that Spider-Man wears in the game is exactly one-to-one matched with the costume that Spidey wears in the movie. Down to the tread that's on the bottom of his shoes. And another thing that they worked out was making sure that it felt like Spider-Man. So you're not limited into how Spidey gets down the street. So as you, for instance, a system that's similar to Free Run in Assassin's Creed, where you can really kind of guide Ezio or whatever assassin that you're playing down the street, whichever way you want, to either run up this particular wall and then go over, or to jump another wall and ride a rail and grab and spin around the corner, like whichever way you wanted to play, make it down the street, you could do that.
Parkour! Hardcore parkour!
Exactly. Spider-Man plays the same way as well. And web slinging works the same way, so that you can really kind of guide yourself and glide yourself. But they changed the camera position in this version of the game. So instead of it being far back third person, it now feels like over the shoulder.
Okay.
Maybe like a half foot back over the shoulder. And so you really have the sensation of, as you're slinging and you're traveling through this city, you feel like you are watching it from Spider-Man's point of view, as opposed to watching Spider-Man go through the city.
Okay.
Which definitely changes the feel of the game for sure. But they also showed off a couple of villains for the game in a couple of different fights. And one thing that they worked on was, because this Spider-Man is much more acrobatic, is that they worked on that as well. So they studied Lucha Libre for a long time, and that's how Spider-Man actually fights in the game. So instead of being real reliant on slinging webs and trapping people so that you can do combos, this Spider-Man is really very, very acrobatic. And so it's kind of like a mesh of capoeira and Lucha Libre. And so he's like moving and grooving and fighting. And like, they showed off one fight with Rhino, who is one of the villains from the comic books. They also hinted at Lizard.
Okay.
But didn't show him off in the game. And it was just really amazing to watch Spider-Man fight in a way that was very fast and contact heavy, which every other outing from Spider-Man that I've seen has all been stealth and slow and trick and web. This was really, you know, like in your face, like kick to your head. Now I'm going to wrap around your leg and I'm going to come up through and uppercut you. And then I'm going to jump from you to the other guy and I'm going to stomp on his head. And then I'm going to do a roundhouse kick by doing an aerial backflip. You know, I was like, whoa, Spidey's like kicking some serious ass here.
It would be kind of awkward if he didn't.
But it wasn't really on my radar to start with. And I was really surprised because, as you know, I'm like a comic book nerd.
Really? I would never have guessed.
Slightly.
With your Boxo comics.
I do have a couple.
Several boxes of comics.
I have several Boxo comics. Comic eye, if you will. But I think because of some of the previous Spider-Man games that I had, because really, like, I liked Shadow Dimensions, but I never finished it. And I didn't feel, like, driven to finish it. I was really attracted to this Spider-Man game after sitting down with it. And not just because of the passion of the Beanox team, because it's obvious that they love their game. They love what they brought to the table. They really challenged themselves to do something different than they had done before. And I think that it really delivers, because it runs really fantastically in real time. But what was really cool is that they shared, which had just been announced like the day before, that if you pre-order the Spider-Man game through Amazon, you'll get a Stan Lee skin. And what was really cool was that they said, but it's not just a skin, because we sat down with Stan, we did voice capture with Stan, and we got his input for the character. And so they walked through a little bit of what the story was, and where you had the comics pages on the Spider-Man side of the world. When you play as Stan, basically he's been working on a manuscript and the pages got blown out of the apartment, and so he's traipsing through the city trying to recover the manuscript pages so he can get his story back, but is also trying to, you know, get rid of ne'er-do-wells as well. So I thought that was really interesting to see that, you know, a whole room of geeks get together to deliver this thing, and it comes out pretty well. So that one was kind of now on my radar because it wasn't. What about you? Like, for you, what was on your radar that you saw that you're like, yep, exactly what I was looking for, plus plus? And then what wasn't on your radar that you stumbled upon and was like, hey,
look at you.
Game
that really, that was on my radar and I was ready to go, obviously was Last of Us. And we did get to sit behind closed doors and actually see how the multiple use functionality aspect of the game was applicable. Because, I mean, they showed during the presser, which I did not get invited to, nor did I watch streaming out of protest that I am not cool enough for Sony, apparently, but Ninja is, so at least we had some presence there. They show the playthrough of Last of Us one way, and at this closed door, they showed it to us in a totally different way.
Like, yeah.
Utilizing different things as an offensive or a defensive mechanism, which I like in this type of game. And I mean, I'm in the house where I feel like survival horror games are slightly in trouble. Also by the second game that I plan to talk about a little bit, Resident Evil 6, which you know everyone knows I'm planning to get October 2nd because I know the release date. But even with big names like Resident Evil, where I feel like they're losing their way, at least we have people who are coming back to the basics of what survival really means.
Right.
And implementing that well in their game. And I know at first I was a little worried that Last of Us was going to be Uncharted with Drake older, right, under a different circumstance. And granted, the game is just as visually stunning as Uncharted is. Yes, Joel does kind of look like he could be related to the Drake family,
yeah,
and his appearance and his mannerism, but they're obviously not the same person, and I'm really digging it. Like when we were watching the behind, you know, closed doors, I noticed that Joel, even though, you know, he's very maneuverable, like he's very agile,
yeah.
You know, he's an older gentleman, and I was worried that he was going to have that, you know, I can run really fast and dodge all this stuff. And he moved, I don't want to say slow, because that's not what it was.
But he moved like a person of his age.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think some people might be like, oh, that's just the frame rate messing up. And I think they're doing that intentionally. And I really like that attention to detail. Now, I mean, we didn't get to see a lot of how Ellie will move, because right, I feel that she should obviously move a lot faster than
being
Joel,
that
being that she's only 14.
Right.
And I hope that they really use her ability of being small and fast and, you know, very climby.
Well, I think that's one of the
advantage
things that they showed off pretty well in the trailer and in the playthrough that we got to sit through, because one of the things that I was worried about in the game, which, to be honest with you, I didn't really have any intention of playing through because survival horror is not...
Remember,
genre,
and Last of Us is not survival horror. I would say it's suspense.
Survival. Yeah.
Granted, there is an element of fear, you know, and in the game, which I think is going to heighten the suspense. But when most people attribute horror, they think slashers, they think a lot of blood, they think a lot of torture porn. The horror genre has really kind of, I want to say, bubbled over, or in some cases has really kind of weakened to the campier side of it.
Uh-huh.
Really. And I think deep down, atmosphere is what really plays the key in what is a horror game and what is a suspenseful game.
Right.
So, I mean, yes, there are elements of fear and the unknown in this game, but I would not consider it a horror game at any stretch of the imagination. But I mean, Naughty Dog has always been really good about their setting, their tone, and their direction. So I trust them hands up. I'm like, from what I saw, I have nothing to worry about. They've already got me. And they got me in the fact that, you know, as they were talking at this Behind the Doors event, that, you know, it was pretty graphic in terms of every encounter that you have to make, physical combat. You know, and you don't get the ability to heighten your health bar. Like, whatever health you've got, that's it. Like, there's no growing back. Like,
right,
it doesn't regenerate over time. None of that is going to play a factor. I mean, outside of having a med kit. But, I mean, besides that, there are no moments where all of a sudden you're back at 100%. It will never be that way. And in that situation, in real life, that's exactly what it would be like.
Right.
And that's it. So that was the one that I was looking forward to, and I already knew. On the funner, because funner is a word.
Funner is a word.
On the passing by, and, you know, really surprised at it, I did have a lovely talk with the people over at Zumba,
okay,
Fitness. And I know that in one of my videos I was talking about how I'd like to see some more titles come for the Kinect that really utilize what the Kinect can do. And possibly hint at what the Kinect can do in the future. And I played a couple of Zumba games before this one, which they just announced, so it's Zumba Fitness Core for those who want to know. And the first few Zumba games, I'm like, this is fun. You know, it's a fitness game based around a dance party, so you don't feel like you're working out because the beats are so bumping and the volume's loud enough that you aren't really paying attention
right.
to what you're doing on the screen. However, I happen to be a person that if you're teaching me a routine or anything like that, I want to be able to see my progress in learning it. And I don't want to just be, oh yeah, this is a lot of fun. No, I am someone who pays attention to those type of things, which is why I really like Dance Central games where they're teaching me something and they literally show me a progressive chart as to what I did really well, what things right. I really need to work on and stuff like that. Zumba took that to heart, and they did start implementing better ways to teach you the routine without saying you have to do this routine perfectly in order to achieve the goal. Because the goal is activity and fun and the underlying current of being a you know healthier person and developing better activity habits, you know, like being more active, which, yes, this game does that. But in Fitness Core, during my lovely debut on a stage... in front of a big, massive group of people.
Yeah, just want to see a fat bitch dance. You like the spotlight, don't lie.
Not when I had all my gear on me and I had to take it all off my great fat bitch dancing and everyone's going to be ready. But they actually are now showcasing in the game. They're showing you prompts for the motion so that it doesn't just happen and you have to figure it out. They prompt you so that you know what direction you're going in and what movement you're going to move in that direction in.
Okay.
So it's still not a... blow by blow of Dance Central, but now, if you really want to learn the routine, you can now learn the routine.
That makes sense.
Yes, and at the very end, they actually do have a chart that now shows you your progress, like which motions, you know, or dance movements you did fairly well, how long your stint was, and how many calories you burned. So if you're using it as a fitness or a workout vessel,
or to augment your
you can track
program.
Your progress far more effectively.
That's fantastic because I think that that's really useful. Like, you know, for me, one of the things that I both love about Dance Central, but also don't love about Dance Central, is that you know if I'm doing a workout with it.
Well, they do have a workout mode, right? But it's a totally different thing. Whereas they could easily incorporate that on their main screen and just have it be a small counter or something,
right?
They could do that.
Like I would love that. You know, that's one of the things that like I do enjoy when I go to the gym and I work out is to see on the piece of equipment that I'm working on like how many calories I burn, and then it reminds me of oh my god, I would have to do this for like another hour and a half to completely burn off that donut that I just ate this morning. Was that donut really worth it? Was it really?
Internal thought.
But I love, you know, the games like Zumba and Dance Central that bring motion on.
The dance games definitely were competing for attention this year.
Absolutely.
I noticed. Because you had Just Dance 4 come out, got Dance Central 3 coming out, and we now have Zumba Fitness Core that can also kind of contend with the fun, dancey element of fitness.
Yeah, not to mention, you know, fitness as an overall was something that I saw across all the systems with motion because... you have, you know, Zumba, you have Dance Central, you have Just Dance 4, you have the new We Fit You fitness.
Sony doesn't have one.
Yeah, but you got to remember that Sony has some things. You've got the Dance Dance Revolution, which is a Sony thing. But they added on this year, Konami showed off the fitness piece of it. So you actually have a counter that, you know, you have routines, some that are more upper body, some that are a core, and it will give you a readout of how many calories you burn, how active you were. So it is a Dance Dance Revolution, but it is with a fitness background. And so in that case, then Sony does have one. So you have motion across everybody. And everybody has either a fitness as a focus or fitness as a secondary focus. And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, we kind of dabbled our toes in it a little bit last year. You know, you had your Dance Central, which...
I was testing the wall with my pinky toe, but now I think I'm ready to jump in.
Yeah, so that was really cool. I would say that, you know, like, for me, Last of Us wasn't a title that I was really looking at picking up, but I'm more interested now in it, to be honest with you, as far as my picking it up and my actually playing through it, because it doesn't seem to be so on the horror side, which is really what my main concern was, because I really don't play survival horror. I typically don't enjoy them.
I know.
But Last of Us, because it's more on the suspense thriller side of the world, and I think because...
And it doesn't take... Most of the stuff that you're going to do is going to take part in daylight, in natural light, because there's no electricity. So you won't have to worry about that whole Alan Wake, I'm a pussy in the dark feel that you get sometimes when you play.
Well, it's not even that for me. For me, it's because the team is so committed to your, as a player, really getting emotionally attached to Ellie and...
And the budding relationship between her and Joel.
That really interested me. You know, when we sat down, they were like, we really want to make sure that you become so attached to Joel and Ellie and that, their survival.
Yeah, that you understand that survival isn't just living day to day, but I mean, you'll see what it takes to really survive, the dedication, the sacrifice. They want you to feel all those things.
And I definitely got that feeling. You know, when you watch the playthrough that we went through where the ladder wasn't in that spot that made it easy to get up, you know, as you talked about, you know, Joel moving like a person in their late 30s, because I imagine that he's in his mid to late 30s.
I actually think he's older than that.
He might be.
Well, from the look of it, because at one point in the walkthrough, they walk by a movie poster.
Yeah.
And Ellie starts talking like, man, what kind of movie was that? And he's like, oh, I saw that before the outbreak. And it's a kid teen movie.
Yeah.
So I think he's in that dad level where he would have a teenage daughter, which would put him in his 40s.
Yeah.
So I think 30s,
early 40s, yeah.
So I think he might be early to mid 40s.
Yeah. But yeah. I love that, you know, talking a little bit about what you were getting into, that Ellie definitely is, from what we saw, more of a agile climber, because there were plenty of places where Joel's giving her a boost to get to some place and drop the ladder. But one of my concerns that I had was that the dynamic between Joel and Ellie would be very much like the Iko dynamic between Iko and Yorta. And, you know, having to call somebody over all the time, that would be something that would be a put-off for some of the gamers.
But it doesn't even seem like you tend to call.
But you don't. But you don't.
It seems effortless because, like, as soon as you find something, she's literally, like, right there, like, yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, I love that the AI seems really smart. Like, one of the things that they showed off was there was a brick laying down that the main character never looked at that brick. Never called attention to the brick.
You know, but Ellie's like, psst, look over there.
Exactly.
She calls it to your attention.
She calls it to attention because there are bad guys coming in your direction, and you can either use the brick as a distraction or use it against them. The player that was doing the demo actually paid no attention to the brick, even though she called attention to it, and went on to fight with the gun. And Ellie went and picked up the brick and then hit on the side. And so when Joel ran out of bullets, she then threw the brick at one of the bad guys, allowing you, controlling Joel, to bum rush him and basically knock him the fuck out and take
knock
his gun.
Knock him the fuck out.
And I loved how it seemed like me as the player, I didn't have to direct Ellie to do that. So it makes me think that the AI is very smart, that they spend a lot of time with it.
Yeah.
So that Ellie is really a support character as opposed to an escort. Because that was a big concern, was that, you know, if the whole thing was a giant escort mission, you know, as far as mainstream goes, a lot of players don't enjoy that as the main mechanic of your game, but it doesn't seem like
that.
Well,
because sometimes it can lessen whatever game that it's in. Like, I mean, like with the Fatal Frame games. The first few were great, but all of a sudden when they put in the element of the two twin sisters, it really broke the element of seclusion and true fear because you weren't by yourself anymore.
Right.
It was you and another person. And I think that, and with the Resident Evil games, with 5 more than 4, because 4, she was the president's daughter, was really just an escort because she really couldn't fight. You often had to hide her in things to take out what you had to go and take out and then go get her, because if you left her, she'd get re-kidnapped. But in 5, with Sheva, and granted, they both had really horrible AIs in that game, so you really wanted to play with someone, because if you didn't, you would not have health packets, because right. She would use it when you had full health, or vice versa. And it dampens the mechanic. It really does dampen the game, and the mood, and the consistency.
Whereas with a game like Iko, it didn't. So, you know, that's kind of like where I was living, between those two worlds. Like, where does it sit?
And
it's not in the world. And so I'm more drawn to Last of Us now because of that. Also on the Sony camp, as far as, like, one that really, like, grabbed me by the balls, Beyond.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, I'm a Quantic Dream junkie, even though I didn't play Heavy Rain through more than once.
I did.
Dude, I had dreams about my son, okay?
You don't even have children.
I had dreams about getting to my son. I had bad dreams about losing Jason. I felt like a horrible parent. And then I had
dreams. You were a horrible parent.
I tried.
And that's why she left
but
you.
But I tried.
Your wife.
You know what? Fuck her. I tried, okay? I tried. I beat myself up about that daily.
But, and the
Jason!
And the really great thing
about
Beyond, and also kind of Last of Us, so I kind of am really happy that they're both in the same camp, these two games. Because, I mean, I know when we first were talking about Last of Us in terms of the screenshots we saw, I was like, you know, Ellie looks a lot like a really young Ellen Page.
Yeah, she does.
Which I thought instantly, I'm like, why haven't we seen Ellen Page hit the gaming industry? And now I know why, because she was doing her own game. She was already doing voice work for another game, and she's bred for it. I actually think that her delivery, from what we got to see, was already really strong.
Right.
So her presence can only make Beyond talk a little bit
about Beyond, because for those people who didn't get a chance to watch any of that content, and maybe our podcast is the first thing that they're hearing about E3, you should probably walk them through.
Well, I mean, I only got to see a little bit of it because I was writing a post when Kim Baby was like, did you just see that? I'm like, no. So, like, I caught the end of it. So I really don't even know the beginning premise. But you are dealing with a woman who, she seems to be a little mentally disturbed. A lot mentally disturbed. And you are actually traveling through, it seems like her mind.
Yeah, so let's take a step back here.
Because remember,
so
I told you, I only caught the ending
of it. The premise of Beyond, and the way that the pitch was started, was that no one knows what lies beyond this life, what lies beyond death. And so the way that Beyond is framed is that we are traveling 15 years in this woman's life. Something has happened. And we don't know exactly what, but we're going to be along for this journey. So then the trailer starts, and I thought it was a trailer, but it turned out that it was actually live gameplay. So it was impressive. With Ellen Page's character sitting in a chair with a sheriff trying to figure out who she is and how he can help.
No, very nice. Quiet. You know, we found you on the side of the road. Do you know where you are? You know, very nice. I mean, they could have really hammed this up like bad cop, you know, trying to trigger her, and she's dead silent.
No, he's definitely coming off as, like, you know, the county sheriff kind of guy who's, you know, in a small town trying to be helpful. You know, what's your name? Do you remember who you are? Do you know what's going on? Like, how can I help? And then he gets to a point where he realizes, like, you don't talk much. And then as he's walking around her, and he's like, well, I've got some stuff to do, and so I'll be right back. And he notices this scar on the back of her head, because her head's shaved at this point in her life story. And he's like, wow, that's a really nasty scar. Do you know how you got it? And he starts to approach her. And then all of a sudden, this coffee cup that he put down full of coffee flies across the room and hits the wall. And he has this reaction like, what the fuck? But doesn't say it out loud. And the expression that's on his face is perfect. It's, you know, exactly how any person in that situation would respond. And it's one of the things that I've always been impressed by Quantic Dream was, you know, the amount of time that they spend on getting the facial expression and the body movement down really makes it hard to think that you're, you know, playing a game as opposed to watching a movie, which is their hallmark, and they deliver it yet again in Beyond. So the sheriff goes out and is like, I have paperwork I'm going to do, but I'll be right back, while he's still trying to process this
what
he
just saw.
Exactly. As he walks out, the camera then focuses on Ellen Page's character, and it's just stuck on her face, and she looks so sad and, like, lost, but then has a moment where she speaks. She goes, oh, I know. They're already here. And, yeah, who's already here? And then SWAT team busts through the door. They make the sheriff open up the door, and then it goes to the title screen of the game. Then they show you some cuts on the back that are actually from the trailer, which show Ellen Page's character just really wrecking shop, and finally ends with her saying, you tell them to leave me alone, or the next time I'll fucking kill everyone. and she like is hobbling off, but they show, you know, her being chased through the woods and on a bike and different states of having hair and not. And so I don't know if like through some series of events she was able to be brought back to life, and when she came back she had extra powers, and now the government wants to study her or not. Like, I don't know what the story is, but I want to know what the story is, and I want to take this adventure not just because it looks fantastic and I love Quantum Dream, but yet again we have a strong female lead, and I think that mainstream wise this game is going to do well because it is coming from Quantic and it looks so fantastic, and so I'm excited
very
on that side to have a strong female lead who takes no shit and is voiced by one of my favorite actresses, you know, today, that can deliver that really emotional.
She can deliver very emotional, but she can also really kind of play the detached, yeah, fragmented.
I would buy her as a detached person. I would buy her as a badass, and I would buy her as an emotional, needing protection, damsel in distress. And I think
being able to see all three of those in this game.
And I'm excited about that. So that was definitely one that, you know, was kind of on my radar because I knew that Quantic was working on something, but I didn't know exactly what they were working on and who was involved. And it's obvious that they're bringing some of the big names as well to the game, but I'm so excited for Beyond. It's like beyond excitement.
Believe it or not, even though I'm going to get this game on release, I still have some really strong reservations about Resident Evil 6, which should be a big shocker for most people because
I'm kind of shocked. I'm not even gonna lie.
Well, because when we were finally getting to see some playthrough and see some more trailer exposure. Literally throughout the whole thing, I'm just like, that, it doesn't resonate with me that it's a Resident Evil game.
Okay.
Like, seriously, if they blurred out what the title was, and obviously did not put a signature character that I would know, like, obviously, it's another Leon story, which, I mean, I've got so many gripes with reusing characters to be protagonists when, you know, the world is big enough that you could really expand.
Right.
And still give us the feel, like, even if they became, like, a minor character that you'll come in contact with and do something with, that'd be fine. But it doesn't always have to be through the eyes of Chris or Leon, or in some cases, Jill.
Okay.
Like, there are more people that make up the world. Stars and the bride. Like, there are so many more other people that they could frame this around. But, it looked so action-y.
Yeah.
And for me, coming from a survival horror background and, you know, fleshing that out and developing out my skills for that over time, there's a lot of maneuvers that you don't need that are really just for flash and entertainment. But in a survival horror setting, you're not trying to entertain anybody. You're trying to save your life.
You're trying to stay alive.
You're trying to live for the next day so that you can try to live through the next day.
Right.
You know, and things now have become so Hollywoodized in Resident Evil, where you're doing dramatic falls, you're doing, and I mean, there was this one.
Do you think that's influenced from the movies?
It could be. It could be, which I don't know why, because those movies are dreadful. Dreadful.
But how do you really feel about them, Panda?
Dreadful. Like, you can take a really happy person, make them watch the first three Resident Evil movies, and they'll want to kill themselves by that point. They will. You want to depress someone who thinks happy all the time, give them that for a gift. No lie.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how I feel about the movies.
Okay, all right.
And they could have really done a lot of justice to those. But anyway, there was a scene where we see Leon, because, yep, if it's not Chris, it's Leon. And Leon is now looking more like, he's not looking like the cop that we got exposed to in 2.
Okay.
You know, he's looking more like a Byronic, you know, hero wandering the world, and whatever he happens to come across, he's gonna mingle in it because he has nothing better to do.
Okay.
Like, I feel like we're losing character, established character development that we already should have.
Okay.
Like, he's no longer cop doing his duty. Now he's, I'm the only one who can do anything. Like, him and Chris go to a bar and, like, I'm the only one who can punch boulders. Yeah, well, I can save your sister. You know, like, that's what it feels like to me. And it's so distracting. But he falls down this billboard, and there's a zombie there, and to me, my idea is distance. Like, I want enough distance for me to shoot off, you know, one or two pops if I need to, headshot and move on. No. Right. Leon's gotta get in close, take a knife, and completely jam the knife by the hilt through this zombie's neck. Now, mind you, as flashy and entertaining as that looks, like, ooh, it's an ooh moment, but you're dealing with a zombie who could bite you and infect you. I would not want my hand close enough to a mouth that, granted, I've stabbed a knife through his throat, but mouth is still able to bite me. It's counterproductive to the element that they're trying to instill in the game.
Right.
So it lost me. It completely lost me there. He's now got a new female partner, because, you know, Chris gets one every game, so why can't Leon get a new chick, and her name's Helena. Actually, it's a double H. It's Helena, and her last name is, I think, Harper, or something like that, Mike. So what happened to your established? I mean, at least, you know, Chris was looking for Jill, who's been his number one partner since, like, the old days. So why isn't Leon looking for Claire? Where is Claire? Is she dead? I don't know. Last time she was in Antarctica. Like, where is everybody?
Maybe she's fighting zombies in Antarctica still.
I don't know.
Maybe some cold-ass zombies.
But it feels like they're forcing another genre into survival horror.
Okay.
And I'm losing it.
Action survival?
That's what I feel like it is now. And not to mention, I mean, you're dealing with zombies, you're dealing with a widespread infection. Yeah, I get that. But within the whole continuity of the universe, of this universe that they have established, they all
the flash of kills get you.
It does. It really gets me. I mean, back in the day, you were stranded, you found a random house, weird shit happened. You were isolated, you had no idea where the fuck you were. Things are off in you. There's the element of survival, horror, and fear. Now I get, well, I'm a badass, and I'm just going to take on all these baddies because they can bite me all the time, and I still don't get infected. That's my problem.
Okay.
It's my problem. But we do have some titles that are coming out that are redefining or bringing back to the forefront the established rule of zombies.
So reestablishment.
Reestablishment. Really. And that's actually coming out of Ubisoft, once again, with Zombie U. Which I did, you know, by the grace of God and by having a really awesome friend who's like, yeah, just...
What up, Shadow Next Gen?
Just roll with me. You can see it with me. And it was absolutely, like, it was right up my alley. And I don't want to run over time, but seriously, it's bringing it back to, it's just you as a solo character. You have to make your way through, you're in London, so you have to make your way through London, and literally, one bite kills you. Not, ooh, a light bite there and a big bite. No, one bite and you're gone. That's it.
The way it should be.
I mean, the loophole to that, though, is that after you get bit, the character that you are is now a zombie, but you do generate as another person.
So it's basically like Quantum Leap. You jump into somebody else's body.
Exactly. But the person that you jump into does not carry over anything that you've salvaged for yourself. You then have to transverse, you know, go back to where your old self was off that zombie because they're holding all your shit. So you don't get like a lockbox that you can just put all your powerful shit in. No, you carry everything with you the way that a survival, you know, your survival instinct would kick in. You'd want to take everything with you where you went, you know, because nowhere is safe. And that's the point. And I like the fact that, you know, once again, we're dealing with basic humans. We're not dealing with superhumans who are military trained, who can hold double bazookas. Like, there are certain things that are just, they're slipping in games that defined the genre. And it's disappointing. Now, I mean, granted, I'm going to get Resident Evil 6 because, yes, it's still visually stunning and I want to see where the story is going to go. But I feel like we're losing it. We lost a little bit in Resident Evil 5. And I get that. I get it. But I feel like we're still continuing on that path and we've just made it worse. And it really worries me that they're going to probably end Resident Evil 27 on fighting this giant fluffy teddy bear that happened to hold the TH1 virus. And then when they kill it, a giant rainbow that's going to disinfect everybody is going to like spread over the world. And Leon and Chris are like, we're bros. And that's how that's going to end. Like, I worry. I have nightmares about that. I really do. I really do. But I'm still going to ride this ride with a forced smile on my face. Like, I got to do it. Got to do it for the world. And I punch boulders, too. They just don't move.
Yeah, another one that really surprised me that, frankly, I didn't even know about until the show floor, and I happened to be walking by, was Injustice over at the Warner Brothers booth. And I gotta tell you, okay, NetherRealm needed to redeem themselves.
Do you think they did it?
Okay? Because we all know about the piece of shit that was Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe. Okay? We all know that we had high expectations, and then people got all protective about how one person might do damage to another person, or how they couldn't do damage to another person, and so they wouldn't. And it just completely changed the game that we were all excited about. You know, I'm still pissed that the Joker's fatality had to happen off screen. But then you have Injustice. So the idea behind Injustice is that maybe, just maybe, the heroes that we know and love could not necessarily go bad, but something could happen and they become fighters against each other.
Like, what something on earth would make all the heroes fight?
You know,
each
like
other?
What would happen if
what would have to happen?
Batman would fight the Flash for some reason. Like, what kind of Clash of the Titans would you have if they all started fighting each other, both good guys and bad guys? So that's kind of where the game pops in. And I have to tell you that first, the characters are superbly stylized. And how they are aligned.
Do we have overly sexualized Wonder Woman?
No, we don't. No, we don't, which is really fantastic.
Does she have her golden lasso of truth?
She has the lasso, she uses the bangles, but she's sexy. But she's not, like, booty short up the ass, you know, titties bouncing all over the place, Wonder Woman.
Okay.
Which is really, really delightful, okay? Because I like a good-looking, strong woman who can kick ass. Who doesn't like a good-looking, strong woman who can kick some ass? What I was really impressed with was, one, the level of detail for all the characters. Two, the environmental details that were there. Because as you fight, you can interact with the environment. And while it's not a full, like, free sandbox world, for instance, you can knock people through buildings. And because you are a superhero, they don't just go into the building and hit one floor. They bounce 7 or 8 floors through because they've been hit with a super hit.
Right.
You know, and for instance, one of the fights they showed off between the Flash and Superman, you know, because, you know, NetherRealm is NetherRealm, and we're dealing with these superheroes. They all use their superpower as part of their thing. So the Flash takes off, does a lap around the planet, and then uppercuts the bejesus out of Superman. Superman, not to be outdone, comes down, gets pissed off, uppercuts the Flash into outer space, flies up, and then knocks his ass back down, not only to the world, but knocks him down into the fucking Batcave. You know, like that. I was just like, okay, NetherRealm, yeah, you got it. You thought this one through? Like, yes, here's my credit card. When can I, like, own this to play it? And you know, it was the redemption, at least, just from what I got treated to, that they needed to have, and they did have. And, you know, they weren't talking about the whole roster of characters. For the demo that I got to see, you could play as Superman, as the Flash, as Batman, Solomon Grundy, Harley Quinn, and not the Harley Quinn that's stylized in the Arkham City Armored Edition, but a different stylized Harley. This one uses guns.
Okay.
And she has longer ponytails, and she's a little more, I'd say probably sexy. But, you know, you have a game that is definitely designed to please fighters using the rebooted New 52 DC characters.
Right.
So I'm impressed. I can't wait to learn more. I think, you know, when you start thinking about all the different characters that are in the DC universe of who could, you know, end
who
up in
pop,
the,
pop up where,
you know,
and what their bit of the story is going
to be. I mean, you sit there and you go, okay, well, that opens me up for Lantern. You know, that opens me up for basically anybody in the Justice League, which, you know, ranges all kinds of characters. And you know, between DLC, because there were lots of slots for characters, the character selection groups on the sides of the screens were as deep as Capcom versus Marvel.
Oh, crap.
So there's the potential for a lot of characters to either be available on disc, or those that you can either unlock through gameplay,
or
additionally from DLC. So, you know, it's very possible that your favorite DC character could show up. Like, I firmly believe that there will probably be a Catwoman in there. And that which Catwoman will it be? I don't know. You know, there's room for Batgirl. Which one is it going to be? If it's not Cassandra Cain, I'm going to die.
It might not be Cassandra Cain.
But think about it. Cassandra Cain would be like a badass.
You are just
house. Because she's so violent. And then comes back from being violent. You know, Barbara Gordon wasn't violent. Barbara Gordon was sweet. And, you know, was upholding justice. Cassandra Cain was a fucking assassin who couldn't speak English. Until a metahuman helped change the body language that she knew into words. So she could communicate like a human being. So she was fighting her way back to being human. Barbara never lost her humanity. Even when all the shit went down and Joker in the one timeline got killed. Like, she never lost her humanity. So that's one of the reasons why I love Cassandra Cain's Batwoman.
Okay.
Because, you know, I love the characters that live in gray and try to flex one way or the other. You know? So I was really impressed with that. What about you? What was the surprising... I expected it to be A, but it turned out to be B.
In that case, that would have to be Devil May Cry for me.
Really?
Yeah, because I got in line initially to play some Resident Evil 6, and
yeah, that didn't happen.
And my choices at that point were Devil May Cry or Lost Planet 3. They were like begging to give away Lost Planet 3 tickets to play, so a lot of people really had just lost hope in the franchise and just were not excited to play it. So I got in for Devil May Cry 3. And, I mean, there are some... I don't want to say that they're red flags, because it's not a deep red. It's like a orange flag.
They're mauve.
They're like a mauve flag.
Burgundy, maybe?
No.
No?
Mauve? No, like an orange, because red is like, oh, no. And then just like,
Okay.
You know, like, it could go into a, oh, no, but I'd have to see more to really know.
Okay.
But the gameplay is very similar to any Devil May Cry game that you've already played. So they're staying true to the game mechanic and the mapping.
Okay.
Which is nice. They do, however, they're letting the Dante that we now are going to get exposed to, we're seeing an element in him that I've never seen in any of the Devil May Cry games. But you and I were talking about how they could make a claim for it. So instead of just having devil abilities... this Dante is showcasing an angel element where he has some, he can summon an angelic weapon of a sort, and do angelic maneuvers.
Uh-huh.
Not like the ones in Kaleidostar, just so I can clarify for you guys. That'd be really funny. But, anyway, so.
You can do the legendary great maneuver.
The angel's maneuver. Where he's, well, actually, technically, with all the flying around he does, he could probably pull it off without a partner. But the Dante that we're seeing now, we're seeing a much younger. We are seeing a, you know, very cocky. Which I mean, that's very basic to Dante's character, is the machismo and the cockiness. So I mean, that was right on. And I know at first when we were seeing pictures of him, we were a little upset to see. You know, black hair, and you know, we didn't see the signature red coat yet. Like, we had already established what Dante should appear like. But I mean, the character fits the mold, and when he does trigger his devil trigger, he does get his white hair.
Okay.
So you will see those elements.
Because it's always hard when you play with a character that's so
established. Established. Never gonna tell how he got there. It's yeah. You're gonna get some people like, well, I don't care how he got there, because obviously he got there,
right?
And he's awesome. So, I mean, I don't want to see my hero, air quotes here, or my, you know, my established character in his weakened state. Like, I wouldn't want to see that. But I'm actually, it's piqued my curiosity a bit. My only disheartening, and I mean, I don't even think I want to use that word. My orange flag warning is, I feel like the setting might be the undoing. Of the character. So we know that Dante is like, I'm going to, you know, somewhere in like the Eastern European, like he's obviously not here in America. He's obviously not in Mexico or like Australia. He's like in like Eastern Europe, maybe Italy, like those areas.
Okay.
You know, and you see that in the first few games where, you know, he's like near castles and the landscapes really kind of help you discern the idea of where he is without actually saying, yeah, he's totally in Florence right now.
Right.
You know, they don't give that away. So I was expecting seeing those in those games that we were going to see, you know, settings that are similar to that, but obviously not the same places because then we'd have repetitiveness. But I didn't see that in the settings that he was in during my 30-minute gameplay session. They felt way too modern. Like, they definitely were still Eastern European, but for the time period that we're looking at, they wouldn't be that fresh and streamlined.
Okay.
Of designs. Like, I think you'd still be dealing with a lot of broad slopes and some type of column, and they got rid of all of that.
Okay.
Like, it feels like the high-end area of, like, France to me.
Okay.
And the time period and the visual doesn't mesh. It doesn't sit with me. So, like, it's already kind of pulling me out of that because I'm like, all right, I can see someone who could be a younger Dante, but I don't feel like it's Dante because the setting doesn't give me the impression that this is the same guy. Not to mention the prompts that they give, or at least they were giving in this demo, when you would get overloaded by demons. Like, usually before, they would just materialize and you would just kick ass and your meter would tell you at the end of the performance what ranking of styling of your fight did you get. I think it was really just the font that got me.
Wow, typography not much?
Like, and I don't normally get that, but, like, it was really kind of boxy. Like, I'd say, like, a really thick, unpleasant Helvetica.
Thick, unpleasant Helvetica.
Or maybe it was, like, Impact. And I was like, what's that?
I love how much of a typography, like, you're noticing
time, like, now.
Your nerd is, like, going to a whole new level, and I'm so proud.
Like, it wasn't a very flattering A. I did not like it. And, like, it just, like, it would flash on, like, a side of a building, like, kill Dante. Like, all these things would show up to try to kick your ass. You know, and I'm like, why don't you just have them show up and bar my entrance like I'm familiar with? So why don't we do it the way that we're traditionally used to? I'm like, you don't need to add more style on top of style. You already have a really good style going for you. I feel like they're doing too much now. And it's distracting me from the character. So in honesty, if they didn't make him Dante, like, he could be his own standalone character. You could totally give him a different name.
Right.
And have him go through, you know, realizing that he's a demon and have totally different abilities. And it'd still be a game I'd buy into. Just not as a Devil May Cry game.
Okay.
Which is worrisome. If you're going to do a prequel of an established character, then you need to maybe believe that this is Dante. And beautiful, yes. But right now, I don't 100% believe it.
Okay.
And that's where I fall short.
Okay. Well, you know, as far as ending on a high note.
Yeah, let's end on a high note.
We like to end on a high note. I think one that was really a big surprise for me, not only because, one, it's not my genre, but two, how much fun I actually had playing it, was a free-to-play game.
What?
Yeah. Nani?
Nani to the...
Called Hawken.
Get out.
Yeah.
Qual es la fouk?
No, seriously. So I got invited to meet and interview the team over there, and I spent most of my time with the lead animator, Chris Lolly. And first of all, it's a free-to-play game.
I know.
Second of all, it's a mech shooter.
Oh my god, Zeno, did you hear that?
And thirdly, it's a PC game. I know, you're making like,
if I could totally drop something right now to make an impacting sound, like, what did I just hear you say?
I know.
I would do that, but
I know. Like, so not a Rochelle.
No,
like,
it's totally not a ninja game at all.
Totally not, like, a me thing at all, but I got to meet the team, and it's a new publisher, Meteor Entertainment, and the company is Adhesive Games.
Because they're sticky.
And you know, they're a small dev house. I think, like, all together, there's, like, 13 people on the team.
Wow, that's a very small dev house.
They're small, but they're dedicated. And they've put together a gorgeous mech shooter. You know, when we sat down and talked, I was like, you know, there are a lot of games that are in the free-to-play genre. Like, what really made you guys sit down and go, no, we want to make a mech shooter? And Chris basically said, you know, we realized that there isn't anything like that in free-to-play, or really a good, strong, solid, you know, outside of things like Steel Battalion, which is for a very specific niche, there really isn't a great mech shooter out there for people who just like to jump into and control a mech and blow some shit up. And I was like, I can respect that. So we talked a little bit about the design because they spend a lot of time on the aesthetics and really getting the animation right, getting the feel of the world because it is set in a futuristic, you know, time and space, which you have to do when you deal with a mech.
Yep. Because if we don't have them now, you can't make it modern.
Otherwise, it's weird. It doesn't feel right, but
it's a paradox.
It definitely has a great sci-fi feel to it. There's a grainy, like, film almost, so you really feel like you're looking out of the glass of a mech as opposed to it being, like, crystal clear, but you feel like you're looking and you're surrounded by a computer screen with your readouts on it. But it's very, very simple to pick up and play. You know, one of my biggest beefs about PC games, and I've said this before, has been that I feel like I have to have 10 extra fingers to, you know, create my macros and throw them off and remember that this is how I move and this is how I strafe and this is how I strafe jump and move and this is how I strafe jump and move and look and this is how I strafe jump and move and look and fire and this is how I strafe jump, look and fire and protect myself. Yeah,
I'm just like, this doesn't sound confusing to me, but that's because I've done stints in it.
And I'm just like, I just want to be able to move and blow shit up. That's what I want to be able to do. I just want, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons why I keep, you know, staying on the consoles is because I've got one button that controls all of that. Move and look. You know? And sometimes it's maybe two, but they're analog sticks. You know, as opposed to keys, where I'm having to, like, you know, try to remember, okay, if I press this all the way down, I'll do a fast look, but if I only press it, like, halfway down, I'll do a half look. I'm just like, I'm, like, done with this. I don't want any piece of that.
Right.
So, I sat down to play Hawken. And I figured, you know, my goal would be, if I could stay alive for, like, 5 minutes, that'll be awesome. Because we were doing deathmatch, and there were already dudes that were playing. And I'm pretty sure they'd been playing for a while. Because right when I went, they were literally setting up for a party, so there were very few people in there. And it just, it was such a joy. Because it was simple movement, simple jump. Like, I could, you know, look with the mouse, simple WSAD movement. Yep. With, you know, a quick boost of fast by holding down the shift key when I moved. And fly, or hover, I should say, power hover.
Yeah, it's a power hover.
Because it runs out.
Yep, it does run out.
Space bar. And that's it, firing with the mouse. I'm like, okay, I can do this. Not only could I do it, but it was really fun. So much fun that when we went back for the party that night, I brought you with me. I was like, no, you got to play this game. Like, before we get into, like, drinks and fun, you really need to play this game. It was so enjoyable. I fell in love with this free-to-play, I'm going to say it again, free-to-play mech shooter PC game.
Bitch, you said free?
I said free-to-play.
Free?
Now, obviously, there's microtransactions because these guys want to make some kind of money. And so that comes in the customization piece. You can buy customizations for your mech, both in just looks as far as, like, stickers and designs and stuff like that, but also as far as, like, loadout and abilities. But it's not, and they struggled and wanted to make sure, and by they I mean the dev team, that it didn't become a pay-to-win game where you just buy out all the customizations.
I'm going to buy the max of everything and just pwn.
Exactly. So the max of everything will not be available as a purchase. There will be some things that you can only earn through gameplay, but all the pieces that will be available for purchase, you can earn through gameplay. So as you take people down or take down things, you will earn experience points that you can then use those experience points to earn these abilities. And so it works out fantastic. I can't say enough about this game. I encourage everyone who's listening to this podcast, even if mech shooters aren't your thing, you definitely want to check it out. The website is playhawken.com. Like I said, I absolutely fell in love with it. They're going to be doing a closed beta pretty soon, but the open beta is going to be in December on 12/12/12. And I cannot tell you, really, it costs you nothing to give it a shot. So you should definitely give it a shot. You can also find them on
Chances
Facebook
are free, bitch.
You can also find them on Facebook and Twitter and stuff. Play Hawken. But I seriously fell in love. Fell in love. I want to say it one more time. With a free-to-play mech shooter PC game. Oh. This is Ninja Sister saying this.
I know.
Ninja Sister just said that. So that's how you know it's good. Because I haven't played a PC game since, like, Sims 2.
Didn't you play Spore?
No, I played Spore on mobile.
Oh, okay. Then, yeah.
Yeah, Sims 2, dude.
Holy fuck.
It's been a while.
It's been a long time.
But Hawkins bringing it back. Hawkins bringing sexy back. There, I said it. They're bringing sexy back.
With the pew-pews.
With the pew-pews.
For free.
For free.
Pew-pews for free.
Pew-pew for no dollars.
For $0.
$0.
A year forever.
$0.
$0 forever.
Forever. And really, the majority of the microtransaction stuff they're going to be using to maintain the servers. So it's really just to make sure that your experience is fantastic when you play the game. So yeah, that's kind of first bucket of E3.
First bucket.
We got another bucket because we have like
so.
I just looked at the list. I'm like, we didn't talk about that. We didn't get around to that. We definitely got to talk about this. So we have a lot more stuff to talk about. But you will find it first, actually. On our site, actually, I should say our page. On our new site for written stuff, egmnow.com/electricsisterhood, because it is official. We are part of
the partner program.
The EGM partner program. We are very, very excited to be part of the team over at EGM. So for all of your written stuff, you'll find it first on egmnow.com/electricsisterhood, but you will be able to find a lot of our written stuff as well, just at a later date, on our main website, www.electricsisterhood.com, or you can use our short address, which is
esh.co, that is esh.co. The short address will bounce you out to the long one. You can read any of our articles within the week. However, I will advise that if you want them hot and fresh on the day of release, you should go to the EGM Now page /electricsisterhood for that.
Yep.
Otherwise, if you're still just living the life podcast, you can find us on iTunes.
That's right. You simply go to the iTunes Music Store or the Microsoft Marketplace and search for Electric Sisterhood and then hit that beautiful little subscribe button. That will ensure that you will get our podcast episodes the moment that we put them out on the interwebs. But if you're not living La Vida I or down with the Microsoft Marketplace, you can get our podcast in other ways.
Yep, you can plug us into any RSS reader or any podcast search engine. But if you're looking for us, you should look for the other shows that fly underneath our banner.
That's right, because we are not the only thing that lives in the land of Esh. No, 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 no. Our podcasts go up popping fresh on Mondays, but you can follow that up with the Testosterone to Our Estrogen on Tuesday with the Boston Bash Brigade, which is held down by our homeboy King Baby Duck. On Wednesdays, Back to Life, Back to Reality is the Geek Agro podcast hosted by our homeboy Deuces Wild. And then for the rest of the week, keeping your nerd needs satiated, there's all the stuff that we write about on our respective websites, which you can find easily in one place, landofesh.com, as well as all the stuff that we tweet about. You can hit us up on Facebook, ask us questions, interact with us, suggest things for us to check out and maybe review, as well as, what am I forgetting? Facebook, Twitter, Blicker, YouTube, Pandalicious Frickin' Fridays. Damn, we got stuff going out every day, Panda.
Out of every internet orifice imaginable.
We are all up in your internet orifices. Orifici?
Orifice?
Yeah. I don't even know what the plural of that is.
Orifici.
We
made it up.
Yeah, we make shit up.
We make shit up.
Yeah, but it's awesome when we do it. So, shit that you dig this week, Panda. Say it.
The guacamole from La Parilla. Bitch say huh?
And then Esmeralda
bitch say
like,
yum.
What?
That's what she say. Bitch say yum. But no, it would have to be the guac from that restaurant that we were in LA.
I know that place was fucking delicious.
It was heavenly. It didn't even need bacon.
Whack-a-mole so good, didn't even eat bacon. You heard Panda say it.
Didn't eat bacon.
La Parilla on Wilshire.
What shit are you digging?
Astro headsets. Pretty much the entire team at Astro, but really, Astro headsets.
I just want to hug all of you every day.
Yeah, we're going to have an in-depth thing on the A50s coming up really soon, but I love my A40s, and I absolutely just, I dig the team over there. I dig what they do. I love their products. The fucking Astro. Astrogaming.com. Yeah, I said it.
Do it up. You will not be disappointed.
E3 post show numero uno.
Wrap up completed.
Achievement unlocked. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
We're out until next week.
Peace.